Namaste Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The Lord's qualities are not material, but he has his spiritual qualities. His activities are simply his sport. They don't have any, his pleasure, they don't have any purpose. Okay. And an example was given of an intoxicated person. Just does what he does out of his joy of being intoxicated.
Which is the fan? Which one?
Nachon mata drishtantena asarva gyatvam api prasanjitavyam swarupanandodrekena swaprayojanam ananusandayaiva lilayate ityetad amshena Svikarat Uchvasa Prashwasa Drishtante Pi Susupt Adhau Taddosh Apatat. Nor is it to be presumed from this analogy of a drunkard that the Lord is not omniscient. Asarvagyatvam. The example should be taken as applying only as far as the idea that his excessive inner ecstasy makes him so absorbed in enjoying that he pays no attention to his own purposes. Purposes are there. But he's enjoying too much to pay attention to them. Otherwise, there's another example where his breathing, the Supreme Lord's breathing in and out, are described by another analogy. It looks like he's compared to someone sleeping. He can be blamed of the same fault as it occurs in states of consciousness like deep sleep. Breathing in and out is usually unconscious, involuntary activity. Especially in sleep, you don't even notice that you're breathing in and out. But the Supreme Lord is fully conscious of everything he does, so it's just an example not to be taken completely literally. Tasmad Swarupananda Swabhaviki Eva Talila. Thus it is established that the Lord's pastimes are natural expressions of his inner bliss, and this is confirmed by Shruti. Shrutischa Devasyaiva Swabhavo Yam Abta kamas yakas priha iti. Such is the character of this personality of Godhead. What aspirations can there be in a person who already has everything? Atra prakrita srishtyadi gatasya sakshad bhagavat cheshtatmakasya vikshanadi karmano Vastutas tu tatavidatve vaikundadi gatasya kaimutyam eva patitam. So even if the Supreme Lord's personal involvement in material creation and other material activity, the work he performs of glancing and so on,
if even they are of this special nature of being pastimes, then what? Then it certainly goes without saying that his activities in realms like Vaikuntha are also of this nature.
Could I get some water? I guess Tota Gopinath went out.
Yeah. I'm sorry. He went to Vrindavan. That? No, that's okay. Oh, it certainly goes without saying that his activities in realms like Vaikuntha are also just his play. Yatoktam nagapatni bihi avyakrita viharaya. As the Nagapatnis say, obeisances to him who enjoys without restriction. And we'll read the whole verse in this commentary, spoken by the Nagapatnis. Commentary, imperfect living beings suffer because they are incompletely aware. The drunkard wanders in his euphoria, happy with himself until he bumps his head on a wall. Okay, because of our ignorance we suffer. Only the supreme living being is always fully aware of everything, so he doesn't bump into any walls. He enjoys forgetting his creative duties while playing with his favorite devotees. Okay, so he neglects to think about having to create universes, but he does it in his sleep. But even as he sleeps in Yoga Nidra, on the bed of Anantashesha, and the universes emanate from his body as his perspiration, he is still completely aware and in control, even while he's sleeping. He just pretends not to be aware. Anvayad itaratas charteshu obhigyakswarat, from the first verse of the Bhagavatam. In all creative matters, he is omniscient and omnipotent. Through his own cognitive and active senses, and also through those of his agents, the sages and demigods. He knows everything and can do everything. Anvayat itaratas cha. Anvaya means indirectly. Through various agents, he can do and know everything. And if he wants, he can do it otherwise. Otherwise than indirectly, he can directly know and do everything himself, if he wants to. Which means that normally the Lord does things to his agents, especially material things. He delegates that to his energies. But he can do it himself if he wants. Thus, because the Supreme Lord has no selfish purposes other than sharing the joy that is inseparable from his nature, all his activities are free play, expressions of his natural ecstasy. He has no ulterior motives for creating the material world, and certainly he has no selfish purposes to fulfill in his spiritual kingdom, Vaikuntha. The wives of the serpent Kaliya prayed to Krishna, avyakrita viharaya sarva vyakrita siddhaye rishikesha namaste stu munaye mauna shiline. O Lord Rishikesha, master of the senses, please let us offer our obeisances unto you. Nothing regulates your pleasure pastimes, but all regulation in this world is created by you. You are thoughtful and silent, absorbed in self-satisfaction. Okay, nothing regulates Krishna's, even though Krishna is the regulator of everything, nothing is controlling his pastimes. He just does what he wants to do, or he does what his devotees want him to do, but nothing forces him to do what he does. Ata eva shri shuk adinam api tadlila shravane raga tak pravittir yujyate. Therefore it is appropriate that Sri Shukadeva and others were moved by intense attraction to take to the hearing of his pastimes. If Krishna wasn't fully independent, if he wasn't the perfect absolute truth, then Shukadeva wouldn't be interested in him. Atascha evam janmani karmani yakartura janasya cha varnayanti smakavayo veda guhyani vitpatehe ityatra janma guhyadhyaya padyepi evam eva vyakyeyam. And so the same explanation should be given of the statement in the Janmaguhya, Mystery of the Lord's Birth, chapter. That Janmaguhya chapter is actually the third chapter of the first canto, giving a short description of various of his Leela avatars. These are his births. The mystery of the Lord's births. I'll make it plural, births. Chapter. And the statement there by Sutta Goswami is, thus learned men describe the unborn and inactive akartur adranasya, the unborn and inactive Lord's birth and activities. He's unborn, inactive, but his birth and activities are described, which are undiscoverable even in the Vedic literature. Veda Guhyani, they're secret in the Vedas. He is the Lord of the heart, Ritpati. Now, there in the third chapter of the first canto, Yatre me sadasad rupe ityadi byam avyavahita padya byam yata swarupa samya gyanenaiva kritasya vidya kritam adyasa sad atma adyasa sadasad rupa nishedasya hetur brahma darshanam bhavati. In the two verses immediately preceding this one, beginning with Yatre Me Sadasad Rupe, the two verses before this one in the third chapter of the first canto. The first one begins, when both of these bodies, subtle and gross, the statements were made in those two verses that by proper knowledge of one's true identity, the gross and subtle bodies are negated, which were imposed on one by the potency of illusion. And by virtue of this, one realizes the Supreme. And also the statement is there, when Maya ceases to act, one regains his true identity. Maya mayo paratav eva swarupa sampatir bhavati it yuktam. There were two verses. That's what the first verse describes. How, when your subtle and gross attachments, the attachment of two gross and subtle body are negated, then one can realize the Supreme. And when Maya leaves one alone, one gains his true identity. That's said in the second verse. Evam eva, well, then he must be. Even though he has some sort of birth and activities, they must be transcendental birth and activities. Otherwise, meditating on him wouldn't give this result. It wouldn't lead to liberation. Evam yata, evam eva kavaya atma rama vitpatek paramatmano janmani karmani cha varnayanti. Okay. It follows from these statements that learned men, those who are satisfied in the self, Atmaramas, Kavis, as glosses Atmarama sages, learned men describe the birth and activities of the Lord of the heart, The Lord of the heart means the super soul, the Lord in the heart. In other words, when the negation of both these bodies and the cessation of this Maya have occurred, one only then becomes empowered to perceive his birth and activities. Okay. Tat tat priti shede, tadupuda tau, chaiva, satyam, tadjanmakar, manubhava sampati, bhavata, ityartaha. Sampati. Sampana is the word in the verse. Sampana evaiti vidur, mihimni sway mahiyate. So sampana is the adjective, sampati is the noun. Sampati atra sakshad darshanam. In this context, the empowerment gained is direct vision. I am translating sampati as empowerment. What was one? In English or in Sanskrit? Yeah. In other words, when the negation of both these bodies and the cessation of this Maya have occurred, one only then becomes empowered to perceive his birth and activities. Sampana. It can mean endowed, but I'm taking it to mean empowered, given the power to realize the Lord. Otherwise, sampana can mean that somebody deposited $1 million in your bank account. But we're not talking about some material acquisition. We're talking about gaining the power, the ability to perceive the personality of Godhead. That's the sampatti here. In this context, the empowerment gained is what? Direct vision, sakshat darshanam, direct vision of the Lord. Tasmat swarup ananda atishayita bhagavad ananda vilasa rupani evatani iti bhava. And thus, because these birth and activities are different from the material counterparts, the words... Oh, I skipped a sentence. Therefore, it is implied, these births and activities are ecstatic sports of the personality of Godhead's bliss, which exceeds the bliss of the soul's self-realization. Ata eva prakrita vailakshanyat akartur ajanasya ityuktam. And it was said he's the one who has no birth and no activities. Thus, because these birth and activities are different from their material counterparts, the words of the unborn non-doer have been spoken. Ata eva veda guhyani apitaniti. And it is said that they are, the activities, the birth and activities are undiscoverable even in the Vedas. Because unless you're empowered by the Lord, even if you read all the Vedas, you won't understand this mystery. You have to be empowered by the Lord's mercy. Commentary. The best of renowned sages, most prominently Shukadeva and the four Kumara brothers, they're the typical examples of self-realized sages who realize the supremacy of Krishna's devotional service. These such best of renowned sages have no interest in what self-motivated materialists do. They don't care to read about the activities of materialistic people. They are helplessly attracted, however, to hearing about the Supreme Lord's pastimes. Many of the leading rishis in this world assembled at Naimisharanya just before the beginning of the current age 5,000 years ago, intending to perform a long soma sacrifice to try to subvert the bad effects of the age. We have no record of the sacrifice being carried to completion. They were going to perform a 1,000-year sacrifice. I have never seen a statement to the effect that they finished it. But in the daily intervals between rituals, the assembly heard the Mahabharata and Puranas from Ugrashrava Sutta, the son of Romaharshana. By the time they had finished listening to all the Puranas and were prepared to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they were mostly purified of their materialistic and impersonal tendencies. They wanted only to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotional service. In his first response to the sage's initial inquiries, the sages asked the questions in the first chapter of the Bhagavatam. Sukadev gave his very first answers in the second. And in the third chapter, he listed and gave a very brief description of several of the Lord's avatars. This is called the Janma Guhya Adhyaya. In that chapter, Sutta briefly described the major avatars of Krishna and concluded with this glorification of hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord. In other words, the verse we read in the Anuchheda is at the conclusion of this description of the Leela avatars. And he glorifies the hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord, Sutta Goswami. The birth and activities of the Lord are the most confidential mystery of the Vedas. So this is another way to interpret Veda Guya. One is that it's a mystery even in the Vedas, that those who study the Vedas can't figure it out. Another is that this is the mystery, the most confidential mystery to be found in the Vedas, the most secret information provided by the Vedas. Most students of the Vedas, misnoticing them, the descriptions of the birth and activities of the Supreme Lord, because these students are diverted by the promise of material success through ritual sacrifice or the promise of liberation by knowledge of the impersonal Supreme. Interest in karma and jnana is the great obstacle to the progression of devotional service. Just before this statement, beginning Evam Janmani Karmani, Sri Sutta had said the following two verses. Yatre me sadasad rupe prati shidhe swarsam vidha avidyayatmani krite iti tad brahma darshanam. When a person experiences by self-realization that both the gross and subtle bodies have nothing to do with the pure self, at that time he sees himself as well as the Lord. Yadyesho parata devi maya vaisharadi matik sampane eveti vidur mahimni sve mahiyate. If the illusory energy subsides and the living entity becomes fully enriched with the knowledge by the grace of the Lord, then he becomes at once enlightened with self-realization and thus becomes situated in his own glory. If Maya leaves you alone, then you can realize yourself and the Supreme Lord. This is the natural progression of a sage evolving into a pure devotee of the Lord. He first learns to discriminate between spirit and matter, discovering himself as an eternal soul, distinct from his physical and mental bodies. His material embodiment has been caused by forgetting his true identity as a servant of God, and that embodiment perpetuated his ignorance for many lifetimes. Realization of himself as pure spirit, eternal, full of knowledge, and full of bliss, has now freed him from that ignorance and has enabled him to progress from self-realization to realization of the Supreme Self. As he matures in Krishna consciousness, the Lord's power of illusion desists from dominating him, and he recovers his eternal birthright of spiritual life. But this path of progress should be followed to its end to gain the full benefit. There is bliss in realizing oneself as pure spirit, Brahman. That, however, is not the ultimate bliss. Self-realization should lead to God realization. Otherwise, one achieves less than he could. Okay, that's the end of this file. Open up file 13. Paragraph 14. Yata akura stutau twayodi tak ityadi dwayam tikayam evetam utapitam. In Akrura's prayers, in chapter 48 of the 10th canto, there are two verses beginning twayodi ta, you enunciated. And the commentary of Sridhar Swami introduces his discussion of these two verses as follows. Nanu tarhi mamavataras tat charitani cha shukti rajata vat avidya kalpitani eva kim? This is a Purvapaksha raised by Krishna. Yeah. But then my incarnations and their activities are only concoctions of illusion, like the silver seen in an oyster? Akrura answers, Nahi, nahi, iyam tu tabalile tiaha dwayena twayodita iti. The first iti, hold on a second. Marks the quotation of the verse by Sridhar Swami. The second iti marks that we're quoting Sridhar Swami. Two itis here. Sridhar Swami introduces these two verses as follows. But then my incarnations and their activities are only concoctions of illusion, like the silver seen in an oyster. He answers, no. No, not at all. They are rather your pastimes. And this is said in the two verses beginning, Tavoditaha. And Tatayava cha Bhagavat Swarupa Samyen Oktam Vaishnave. Thus the Vishnu Purana describes these activities of the Lord as non-different from the Lord's very self. Nama karma swarupani na paricheda gochare yasya kila pramananam savishnur garbhagastava. That Lord Vishnu, whose names, activities, and identities cannot be delimited into categories by any means of acquiring knowledge, that Supreme Lord is present now in your womb. And, okay, Rupa Karmeti va Patantaram. Here, Nama Karma are the first words, but there's another manuscript version, different reading of Rupa Karma. An alternative reading of this verse says Rupa Karma. Forms and activities. It doesn't make any difference. These are all non-different than your very self. Itam eva abhipretam shri gito panishad bi. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tatvataha. The same is intended by the statement of Sri Gita Upanishad, which begins, one who understands in truth the nature of my birth and activity is liberated and comes back to me. That couldn't be happen just on the strength of some material activity and births. Just understanding this birth and activity frees one from everything material. Okay. Commentary. After killing the tyrant of Mathura, Krishna went to the homes of a few friends, including Akrura, whom he promised to visit after finishing this urgent business. As soon as Krishna entered his house, Akrura worshipped him and offered him prayers. Akrura reminded Krishna that his appearance and his avatars is not like the conditioned birth and life of other people. And Akrura then spoke this verse. Dehadyupadirani rupi tatwad bhavona saksha nabidat manaksyat atona bandas tavanaiva moksha syatam nikamas tvaino vivekaha. Akrura told Krishna, since it has never been demonstrated that you are covered by an imaginary feature, by the imaginary features of a material body and everything connected with it, it must be concluded that for you there is neither birth in a literal sense nor any duality. Therefore, you never undergo bondage or liberation. And if you appear to, it is only because of your desire that we see you in that way, or it is simply because of our lack of discrimination. Syatam nikamas, according to your desire, no u vivekaha, or it's our ignorance that we see that you seem to be bound up in material affairs. He's acting, Krishna, the Supreme Lord is acting, but his action is not material. Commenting on this verse, Srila Sridhar Swami suggests Krishna's reply to Arjuna's claim that he, Krishna, never suffers bondage and so never needs to be liberated. Krishna tells him, haven't you heard how I was bound to a grinding mortar and how I was freed from the grips of Kaliya in his lake in the Jamuna? So what do you say? No bondage, no liberation. No, Akrura counters. You played like that just because you wanted to. Krishna answers, well, are my personal appearances in this world imaginary shows of illusion? I'm only pretending that these things are happening? Akrura responds in the next two verses. Atvayodito yam jagato hitaya yada yada veda patak puranaha badyeta pashanda patayra sadbis tada bhavan satvagunam bibarti. You originally enunciated the ancient religious path of the Vedas for the benefit of the whole universe. But whenever that path becomes obstructed by wicked persons following the path of atheism, you assume one of your incarnations, which are all in the transcendental mode of goodness. Satvam prabodhya vasudeva griheva tirnam swam shena baram apanetum ihasi bhume akshauha nishatavadena sureta ramsha ragyam amusha chakulasya yasho vitanvan. You are that same Supreme Person, my Lord, and you have now appeared in the house of Vasudev with your plenary portion. You have done this to relieve the earth's burden by killing hundreds of armies led by kings who are expansions of the demigods' enemies, and also to spread the fame of our dynasty. Krishna's descents, his janma, and what he does in those descents, his karma, are both his free play. Both are eternal, done in full knowledge and fully blissful, Satchitananda. The same as everything else of what he is. The all-attractive forms he assumes as manifold expressions of his personality, and the birth and activities of these forms are all perfect and complete. His names are also perfect and complete. Each of these aspects of Krishna is non-different from the whole. In the Vishnu Puranas version of the demigods' prayers to Krishna in the womb of Devaki, they propose that his names, activities, and very self, or in the alternate reading, his forms, activities, and self, cannot be categorized by any of the recognized means of information processing, the chief of which are sensory perception, logical analysis, and the opinions of knowledgeable authorities. But at the same time, in these prayers, the demigods are attempting to just such a characterization. They say there's no characterization, but they're doing it. They're categorizing his activities, telling what they have learned about the personality of Godhead from wise teachers of the Vedas. The demigods are not contradicting themselves by saying it can't be characterized, his activities, and then characterizing them. Ordinary words cannot describe the Supreme, and ordinary minds cannot begin to understand him. Yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha, from approaching which words desist, and which the mind fails to reach. But there are extraordinary words, the statements of the Vedic scriptures, which can describe him, and there are extraordinary minds. I'm in my commentary. But there are extraordinary words, the statements of the Vedic scriptures, which can describe him, and there are extraordinary minds, those of faithful devotees of the Supreme, who can understand these descriptions, and with further progress, see the categories of the Supreme with their own eyes. Krishna himself corroborates. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvataha chaktva deham punarjanma naiti mamiti sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Tata. Namno vailakshanam vailakshanyam van manasa gochara guna vilambitvena swatak siddhat tvam. Okay, we talked about other features. Now the Lord's name. The uniqueness of his name is similarly its being self-manifest by virtue of expressing his qualities. Other people get assigned names. Your mother and father give you a name. It's their choice. But the Lord's names are self-manifest. They express his qualities directly without someone artificially assigning him those names. And those his qualities are beyond the scope of speech in the mind. But his names describe those qualities. Yata tadyata vasudevadhyatme aprasiddhes tan gunanam anama sau prakirtitaha. Vasudevadhyatma says, because his qualities are unknown, he is said to be nameless. And the Brahma Purana says something. Brahme anama sopasiddhat tvat arupa bhuta varjanat. In the Brahma Purana, he is nameless because his qualities are unknown, and formless because there is no presence of the created elements in him. Ata eva nama karma swarupani iti purv odharananu sarin asyapi vaishnava vakyas ayam evartaha. Thus, in accordance with the above-cited verse, whose names, activities, and identities, the same idea is also conveyed by the statement of the Vishnu Purana as follows. The Vishnu Purana also says, Nayatra nata vidyante nama jatyadi kalpana tad brahma paramam nityam avikari bhavanaja na kalpanam ritirtasya sarvasyadigamo yata yataha Tatak Krishna Chutananda Vishnu Namabir Idyase Ityasya. So the Vishnu Purana is saying the same thing when it says, O Master, that in which there are no manufactured names, categories, and so on, is the supreme truth, eternal and unchanging. It is your own good self. O unborn one, but since nothing can be comprehended without some exercise of imagining, you are therefore worshipped by the names Krishna, Achyuta, Ananta, and Vishnu. Now that seems to say that you really don't have any qualities and names. We just make up some names so we can worship you. The impersonalist can misread this statement. But Jiva Goswami says here, ityetad Vaishnava Vachanan Nantadam na Virudham. These words do not conflict with the other statement cited from the Vishnu Purana, that he does have name and form. Okay, let's see what the commentary says about this. The Supreme Lord's names are not like the names of other persons. In general, words are not manufactured by their users, who have to learn in their early childhood the pre-existing assignment of words to their meanings. We don't make up our own words. The ancient Mahabhashya commentary on Panini's Sanskrit grammar remarks that one does not normally go to a village of grammarians, as one might go to a village of potmakers, and ask, make me some words. Proper names, however, are manufactured. Proper names are manufactured by the parents of a newborn child. The discoverer or founder of a place, or the inventor of an artificial product. So someone finds the 112th element and they call it after somebody. He makes up the name. The person who discovers it can make the name. That's just conventional assignment. Names are usually assigned arbitrarily by someone's choice. The main exception to this rule of conventionality are the names of the Supreme Lord. Since the names of God are eternal, no one has manufactured them. Even if someone wanted to create names of God, without access to the transcendental qualities of the Lord, he would not know how to properly begin. Even if you wanted to make up some names of God. If God hasn't revealed himself to you, then you have nothing to say. The qualities of God and the names that describe him are self-manifested. They only reveal themselves to the purified minds and senses of the Lord's devotees. So we can tell people, chant Hare Krishna, this is the names of God. And they won't believe us. They'll think we're just mumbling some meaningless gibberish. Because they have not become devotees, they haven't gotten the mercy to be able to appreciate that these are the names of God. Or they say God has no name. We can't even say the word God. We have to say, spell it G-D. You know, not even say God. It's blasphemy to utter the name of God. As was stated in the prayer of the demigods to Krishna in the womb that was cited in 46.14, a little bit earlier in this Anuchet, ordinary persons cannot know and categorize the Supreme Lord's name, activities, and identities. The Lord himself has these attributes eternally, exhibiting them in this world at various times and places. Impersonalists may consider the personality of Godhead's names, like other duality, to be temporary. But who or what could have created them? Okay, if they're temporary, where'd they come from? Everything that's temporary has a creation, a creator. So, okay, who made up these names then, if somebody made them up? Show me the author of the names. When the Vishnu Purana seems to say that the names and categorical identities of the Lord are produced by exercise of imagination, that should not be understood too literally. Nobody could have made up all the pastimes of Krishna just out of his imagination. No fiction writer could come up with all this. Words are symbols for what they describe. Symbols. Something that can be held in the mind and on the tongue as a substitute for the original. Money in the form of paper bills or electric credit is only a symbol for things of real natural value. But it is much more easy to exchange money than to barter in bulky commodities. These dirty pieces of paper are not actually worth much. The Indian government was disbanded, India was taken over by China, and only Chinese money was legal, then all these pieces of paper would be worthless. Nobody would place any value. They would sell them by 100 kilograms just for scrap. They have value just by convention. We just have this mythology, this belief that it's worth something, these pieces of paper. And we trust each other and hand around these pieces of paper just for convenience sake. Like that, words are used to describe the reality just by convention. But unlike material names, with language we can use words instead of having to carry around with us all the things we want to talk about. But unlike material names, the names of God are the same as God himself. But still they are an especially convenient form of God. Few people can have God's personal audience on demand. But every human with an ear and a tongue can hear and chant his names. Two passages have been cited from the fifth amsha of the Vishnu Purana. Two different passages. The part of the Purana narrating the birth and pastimes of Krishna. That's the tenth canto of the Vishnu Purana, is the fifth canto, where Krishna Leela is described. And specifically, these two different passages have been cited from the demigods' prayers in the second chapter, and then Akrura's prayers at the lake on the border of Rajadhamma in the 18th chapter of the fifth canto of the Vishnu Purana. Only if misinterpreted do the two passages seem to conflict. One saying that the Supreme Lord's names and so are unknowable, and the other says that they're imagined, imaginary. Well, it's one or the other. You know, if something's not knowable, then how can someone make it up in his imagination? But rightly understood, the first says that everything about the Supreme Lord is beyond the reach of mundane knowledge. And the second says that they are not mundane creations. The devotee can know the names, and the names are eternal. They're self-manifested, the names and qualities of the Lord. Okay, that's enough for today. We won't get to the end of this Anuchet before the vacation, but we'll make an attempt to make a little more progress tomorrow. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.